Hello, my name is John Wadlington. I have been a member of Old South Church for over 12 years now. This church has been with me through a lot, from the happy occasion of the birth of my daughter, Anna, 12 years ago, to the recent death of my mother this past Thanksgiving. As a wonderful result, we became family. As with all families, we're made up of individuals, some quiet, some kooky, some richer, some poorer, some who come to church every Sunday, and some who attend less frequently. Together, we make up the body of Old South Church. All of us get something from our involvement in the church, and we all have something to give. At this time of the church year, we are talking about our stewardship of the church. A steward is someone who takes care of something, manages something, looks after something. So when we think about our stewardship of Old South Church, we need to consider this. How do we take care of the church that takes such good care of us? To put a finer point on the subject, or perhaps I should say a blunter point, we need to talk about money. Now you might be wondering how I came to be standing in front of you this morning talking about anything, much less money. I can assure you I'm wondering the same thing, because public speaking is not my bag. In any event, around mid-December, I received a gentle, hopeful email from Nancy asking if I would be willing to speak to you about why I give and why it is important to me. When I read the email, I will admit that my heart sank a bit for two reasons. The first was the one I have mentioned earlier, that public speaking is something I avoid. I'm an anesthesiologist. I spend much of my day quietly behind an ether screen, taking care of my sleeping patients, telling the few students that come my way that a good anesthesiologist is rarely noticed. Well, unless I'm putting you to sleep right now, this is certainly the opposite of being an anesthesiologist. Now, the second reason my heart sank a little at the invitation is that I knew I would say yes. And the reason I knew I needed to say yes, because I knew it was time. It was time for John, the man who has been a member of the church for 12 years, but who has studiously remained on the periphery in the balcony, which is for me basically the sanctuary's equivalent of an ether screen. It was time for me to step out of my comfort zone and give back. I will also add that it is hard to say no to a gentle, hopeful email from Nancy Taylor. I've spent a lot of time considering why I give over the last few weeks, and I've come to realize that one of the main reasons I give is that I was taught to. Much of the credit of why I give to the church goes to my parents, who set a wonderful example of generosity for me at our church in Nashville, Tennessee. When I was growing up, we were one of those go to church every Sunday, no matter what kind of families. If a snowstorm, and that was 2 inches in Nashville, made driving difficult, we would walk to church. When my three siblings and I were very young, my parents would give each of us a dime to put into the offering plate as it came around. And when we were a little older, we made a pledge ourselves. Throughout my youth, I watched as my parents continued their generosity, donating not only their money, but their time to the local YMCA, the local science museum, and the like. And though we lived well, we lived relatively modestly. Though my father was a physician, he drove a beat-up old car and sometimes simply biked to work. We would have foreign exchange students stay with us, and orphans to our house for the holidays. One year, before an orphan boy our age was to come over for Thanksgiving, my mother pulled my brothers and me aside and said, "When he leaves tonight, I want you to give him whichever of your toys he wants most." The funny thing is, I don't remember what toy he took, but I do remember the lesson in giving. My parents' teachings about generosity were consistent. My father would end almost every prayer at the breakfast or dinner table with, "And help us remember it is better to give than to receive." And my mother would read a particular poem to us every Thanksgiving. She loved children's poetry, so though it was styled for a younger audience, she read it every Thanksgiving, even through our adulthood, until a couple of years ago when I took over the helm and read it for her. I shared it at her funeral, and I will share it with you now. It's called A Good Thanksgiving, and I will try to read it with the enthusiastic inflections of my mother. Said old gentleman Gray, "On a Thanksgiving day, if you want a good time, then give something away." So he sent a fat turkey to Shoemaker Price, and the shoemaker said, "What a big bird, how nice. And since a good dinner's before me, I ought to give poor Widow Lee the small chicken I bought." "This fine chicken, oh see," said the pleased Widow Lee, "and the kindness that sent it, how precious to me. I would like to make someone as happy as I. I'll give Washerwoman Biddy my big pumpkin pie." "And oh sure," Biddy said, "'tis the queen of all pies. Just to look at its yellow face gladdens my eyes. Now it's my turn, I think, and a sweet ginger cake for the motherless Finnegan children I'll bake." "A sweet cake all our own, 'tis too good to be true," said the Finnegan children, Rose, Denny, and Hugh. "It smells sweet of spice, and we'll carry a slice to poor little lame Jake, who has nothing that's nice." "Oh, I thank you and thank you," said little lame Jake. "Oh, what a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful cake. And such a big slice. I will save all the crumbs, and I'll give them to each little sparrow that comes." And the sparrows, they twittered as if they would say, like old gentleman Gray, "On a Thanksgiving day, if you want a good time, then give something away." Because each character in the poem gave cheerfully according to his or her abilities, this poem reminds me of a verse in 2 Corinthians. "He who sows sparingly shall reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully shall reap bountifully. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." What else does the Bible teach us about giving? In the story of the widow's mites, which we have just heard, after several wealthy people had come and made their large offerings to the church, a poor widow comes and puts the equivalent of a few pennies into the church plate. Having seen this, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, "This poor widow put in more than all the other contributors to the treasury, for they have all contributed from their surplus wealth, but she from her poverty has contributed all she had, her whole livelihood." Messages about the importance of generosity are all around us. If you won't take it from the Bible verse and the Bible story I have shared, will you take it from the movie Hello, Dolly? Hello, Dolly, you might ask. Well, I was asked to make this personal. And if you, especially the men out there, are anything like me, then Hello, Dolly was one of your favorite movies growing up. But in case I'm wrong, I will take just a moment to get you up to speed. In that movie, the main male protagonist is Mr. Horace Vandegelder. He is a grumpy, miserly, Scrooge-like character who, after the clever attentions of Dolly Levi and a few extravagant musical numbers, comes to realize, and I quote, that money, pardon the expression, is like manure. It's not worth anything unless it's spread around, encouraging young things to grow. You may have noticed I have borrowed words from many others this morning, perhaps to make up for a weakness in my own, but thankfully, my words don't have to be the most amazing words to be spoken from this pulpit. They just have to be my best. My step out from behind the ether screen best. And my financial gifts to the church don't have to be the biggest the church has ever received. Like the widow's mites, they just have to be my dig deep to be a cheerful steward of the church best. If you give your money to Old South Church, we promise to treat it like manure. That is, we promise to spread it around and encourage things to grow. There's something wonderful about spreading money around, because when I can give, when you can give, it also means that each of us must at some point have realized that we already have enough. Now it's time to hear from another Dalai, the Dalai Lama. He says, when you're discontent, you always want more, more, more. Your desire can never be satisfied. But when you practice contentment, you can say to yourself, oh yes, I already have everything that I need. Cheerful giving, when nothing is expected in return, is one of the surest signs of contentment. It is the only pure form of giving, because if we expect something back, it isn't really giving, it's trading. It's bartering, it's some form of mortgage. But if we can radiate generosity, then the giving itself becomes the reward. The last borrowed words of my story this morning relate to this. The attribution is unclear, but here are the words. Even after all these years, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. Look what happens with a love like that. It lights the entire sky.